Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Channel Infrastructure full year results briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Naomi James, CEO. Please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome everyone to our conference call for our 2022 full year financial results, which includes our first 9 months operating as an import terminal with a new and improved business model. Today I will run through how we have delivered on all of our 2022 priorities and the key operational highlights for the year. Then I will hand over to Jarek, our CFO, to run through the financial results. I'll then finish with an update on our growth opportunities, at which point I will introduce Rob Buchanan, our incoming CEO, who will outline Channel's priorities for the current financial year. You would have seen the investor presentation released to NZX this morning, so if you have that in front of you, we will refer to page numbers as we move through the presentation. Page 2 contains the usual disclaimer information. On now to page 3. I think it's fair to say that Channel Infrastructure has had an incredible year with the transformation of the business, the financial results we have delivered and the sustainable business model we now have in place. As you are all well aware, in what was a significant milestone, we safely completed the shutdown of the refinery operations and transitioned to an import terminal on 1 April last year. The conversion project, which includes the decommissioning of the refinery, transitioning our workforce and commissioning of contracted private storage, continues to track to plan and to budget and is now significantly de-risked. Our refinancing program was successfully completed with the cost of funding reset in line with an infrastructure company. And our new business model has delivered the first profit we have seen in over 3 years. And this, along with strong cash flow, has meant a return to dividends for shareholders. I will start with the highlights and the operating update on page 5. At the start of each year, we talk to our priorities. This page lays out our priorities for 22, as I shared them with you at this time last year. I'll go into more detail in the following pages, but I'm pleased to say we have delivered against all of our 22 priorities. I'm really proud of the hard work and dedication of the entire team that has enabled us to successfully deliver on all of these significant commitments. If you could turn to page 6, which outlines our progress across our key safety, environmental and people metrics. We have always had a firm focus on our health and safety and protecting our environment. And this was even more important through the period of the refinery closure and intensive decommissioning that we undertook in the first half of 2022. We have much to be proud of here, including that there were no significant safety incidents throughout 2022, a huge achievement and testament to the strong safety culture we have at Marsden Point. In 2022, we saw a big step down in our staff numbers, and I'm proud to report that we have surpassed our target with 97% of those impacted last year supported into new roles, training or opportunities within 6 months. Finally, through our transition, we have reduced our environmental impact and made a step change in our carbon emissions. We have seen a 98% reduction in scope 1 and 2 emissions. We have recycled over 1,250 tonnes of decommissioning waste materials, and there has been a 30% reduction in legacy groundwater contamination in the past 6 years. Before we get into the other aspects of 2022, I wanted to briefly touch on the recent cyclone on page 7. Our efforts came through Cyclone Gabrielle really well, with limited impacts to our site and the pipeline. This reflects the work done over many years and the efforts of the Marsden Point team, who prepared well ahead and managed continuous operations throughout. A flyover along the full length of the pipeline late last week confirmed very limited impact from the cyclone to land stability around the pipeline. And we continue to manage on a proactive basis reinforcement of land areas along the pipeline route where there is a risk of movement. We are still assessing schedule impacts on this year's private storage following the cyclone and the unusually wet weather we have experienced since November. And our thoughts do go out to all of those who are working to clean up from this devastating event and to the first responders who have been working tirelessly to help all of those in need. Today, as well as releasing our annual report, we have also released our second sustainability report, which I do encourage you to read. Included in this report and on slide 8 are an update on our progress to achieving the ambitious targets we set ourselves last year, which were to support our workforce through a just transition, achieve net zero scope 1 and 2 emissions this decade, and to support our customers to decarbonise the fuel supply chain. We are making excellent progress against all of these, and our sustainability report provides more details on this. Turning to page 9, we have continued to see strong recovery in fuel demand from the impacts of COVID travel restrictions. Jet fuel demand has recovered to 70% of pre-COVID levels prior to the most recent weather events in Auckland, which represents a doubling of demand since borders reopened at the end of February 2022. Diesel demand remains strong, as it has regardless of the impacts of COVID, and we have seen petrol recovering from COVID impacts through the year as people have returned to the office. The volume chart on page 10 shows the strong recovery in fuel demand over the last 12 months as COVID restrictions have eased. Q4 throughput has been the highest level since before COVID and is up 11% on Q3 2022. Reflecting growth in all fuel types. Since becoming an import terminal, we have discharged some 56 ships, and we have invested in a significant increase in fuel storage through the transition to terminal operations, which when complete, will have 86% more fuel storage capacity at Marsden Point compared to when we operated as a refinery. Please turn to page 11. Importantly, our conversion project continues to track to budget, as we have communicated in our quarterly updates. Conversion project spend was approximately $114 million to the end of December. Given the refinery decommissioning and workforce transition are now largely complete, and we have spent or committed 65% of conversion project costs, this project is now significantly de-risked. Like others, we are continuing to see supply chain and inflation pressures and are managing them with limited drawdown to date on our project contingency. Looking at page 12, this outlines the three key components of the conversion project, being decommissioning the refinery, the workforce and business transition, and projects to upgrade our terminal facilities, and what has been completed for each of these components and what is still to come. The pie graphs show you how the budget of $200 to $220 million is allocated and how much is spent or committed to date. There is a lot of detail on this slide, which I'll leave you to read, but in short, the decommissioning and workforce transition is largely complete, with the focus now on completing terminal upgrade projects and embedding our new terminal systems and processes. Moving to slide 13 and our private storage growth. We have now commissioned over half of the contracted private storage, with the remainder of the tanks due to be commissioned around mid-2023, subject to the weather impacts I mentioned earlier. In the second half of 2022, we signed an additional terminal storage agreement worth $25 million of additional revenue over the next 5 years, with $4 million of this included in our 2023 guidance. Now I will hand over to Jarek to run through the financials.
Thanks, Naomi, and welcome everyone today. Turning to financial highlights on page 15, I'm really pleased to report a strong set of financial results reflecting operations under the new business model for the last 9 months. Our results today are those from the refinery operating in the first quarter and presented as discontinued operations, and the import terminal operating from 1 April to 31 December presented as continuing operations. We have delivered a strong EBITDA and EBITDA margin and generated our first profit in 3 years. We have completed a comprehensive refinancing program, the benefits of which we have started seeing already. And last but not least, we have declared a fully imputed final dividend of 5 cents per share and a fully imputed special dividend of 2 cents per share. Let me turn to page 16, which reflects continuing operations. Underpinned by strong take-or-pay commitments, the terminal delivered a strong EBITDA of $57.5 million, implying an attractive EBITDA margin of 65%. I'm pleased to say we have successfully reset the cost of funding and maintained a significant portion of debt fixed, which provided us with significant funding cost certainty in the period of increasing interest rates. This, together with lower ongoing depreciation following a review of terminal asset lives completed in the first half, delivered a strong profit of $17 million from continuing operations. Please turn to page 17. As you are aware, our earnings profile is now more stable. Our revenue is underpinned by our strong contract protections. 94% of 2022 revenue was underpinned by fixed or take-or-pay fees, and almost 90% of revenue is subject to indexation from this year. The PPI announced in November last year effectively set our fees for 2023, with terminal fees uplift of $6.3 million year on year. Please turn to page 18, where we take a closer look at operating costs, which have now been reset to terminal levels. A quarter of operating costs comes from electricity, which we see as a key opportunity to reduce our cost base further, and Naomi will talk to this shortly. Like many businesses, we have been operating in an inflationary environment. Whilst we are seeing cost pressures in some areas, we have been able to manage this to well below PPI. Turning next to cash flows on page 19, if you look at the waterfall, our net debt position increased to $257 million at the end of 2022 as expected. We continued to see strong cash flows from our operations, which funded more than three quarters of the conversion spend. In the first year of terminal operations, we have been focused on maintaining our terminal facilities, as well as investing in additional tank storage, and the capital spent across staying business and growth capex is in line with our expectations. While financing costs were in line with our guidance in 2022, we have carried a higher level of line fees as a significant portion of our bank facilities remained undrawn. We're expecting this to drop as bank facilities are more fully drawn, which together with more competitive bank debt pricing is expected to reduce the effective interest rate. We maintain a strong balance sheet with leverage at 3.4 times as of December within the targeted range of 3 to 4 times. Moving to page 20, I'm really proud of the work that we have done resetting the cost of funding last year. We have established a strong presence in both bond and bank markets with significant funding capacity offered by the market. We continue to maintain significant funding headroom as we progress terminal upgrade works, and we are expecting our debt to peak in the next 12 to 18 months at $70 to $90 million above current levels. We will continue to benefit from our hedges with 97% of debt fixed at the end of 2022, and with a significant portion fixed in the following years, we have certainty of funding costs. And in 2023, we plan to review options for the $75 million subordinated notes, which are due for renewal in March 2024. Please join me on page 21. In November, following the PPI announcement and additional storage contracted, we upgraded our 2023 financial guidance, and today we confirm the guidance remains unchanged. I will now hand over to Naomi, who will provide a strategic update.
Thank you, Yarrick. I'm not going to go through the next two pages, 23 and 24. I'll leave you to read the detail. The purpose of these pages is really to outline against the strategic framework that we've previously shared with shareholders, our progress in 2022, and our key areas of focus for 2023. Turning now to what is new news today, which is the update to the Hale and Twomey long-term fuel demand outlook found on page 25. Page 25 gives you the whole of New Zealand's picture. Late last year, with more clarity around the COVID-19 recovery and the latest industry and government policy developments in mind, we engaged industry experts Hale and Twomey to update their fuel demand outlook for us. This fuel demand outlook gives us more detailed bottom-up modelling than has been done before. Hale and Twomey have used DKMA passenger data supplied by Auckland Airport to give us a really clear sense of the future jet fuel demand, as well as bottom-up forecasting across each consumption sector for diesel demand and by each vehicle type for petrol demand to give a more accurate picture of fuel demand and the fuel transition over time. Looking now on page 26 and the part of most interest for Channel Infrastructure, which is throughput at our Marsden Point facilities. What we can see here is a much faster recovery for jet in the near term and a much stronger outlook for diesel over the long term. This means that based on this latest view, terminal revenue would rise above take or pay levels in 2025. The other thing I'll draw your attention to is that over time, the proportion of renewable fuel throughput at our facilities is expected to increase based on the gradual uptake and transition to sustainable aviation fuel and biodiesel, with the transition fairly easy for drop-in fuels from an infrastructure position. These second generation fuels are able to utilise existing facilities. In the interest of time, I'm not going to talk to the detail of the additional analysis on diesel and petrol demand found on page 27. I'll just point out that what we are seeing in simple terms is that petrol demand is peaking and then declining as expected as the vehicle fleet electrifies. Diesel demand is expected to stay stronger and transition much more gradually, particularly for agriculture, industry and heavy transport. Now turning to the most interesting part, which is the jet growth story on page 28. Auckland International Airport, as announced yesterday, expects recovery in passenger numbers to pre-COVID levels by 2025. And this is aligned with Hale and Twomey's forecast for jet fuel demand recovery by 2026, with the lag reflecting fleet fuel efficiency improvements since pre-COVID. As we saw in the 5 years pre-COVID, jet fuel demand increased at a rate above passenger growth due to the increase in long and ultra long haul flights, as well as premium travel. Hale and Twomey expect these trends to continue to drive growing jet fuel demand. Turning now to page 29. Over the past 12 months, the Ukraine war, and even more recently, Cyclone Gabrielle, have reminded us of the importance of supply chain resilience. With the transition from importing crude oil into New Zealand to importing refined product, the key to resilience is the amount of product we have stored in country to provide a buffer against a range of disruption scenarios. Our focus as an infrastructure company is on having storage available to support this. There's a big increase in storage capacity occurring at Marsden Point through the transition from refinery to terminal, with even more capacity due to come online later this year. At the same time, the government is working to implement minimum domestic stockholding levels to ensure the right level of resilience exists in the system. And with the recovery that we can see coming in jet fuel demand, we believe it's important now more than ever that the recommendations that came out of the inquiry into the 2017 pipeline disruption are addressed to ensure a resilient fuel supply chain. If we turn to page 30, I think it's really important to note that the steps taken by the New Zealand government to improve fuel resilience in New Zealand represent a real opportunity for Marsden Point. With our unutilised tank capacity and connections to the largest fuel demand sources in New Zealand, we have a key opportunity to support the establishment of the 17 million litre diesel fuel reserve, as well as any additional storage that might be required from the incoming minimum domestic stockholding policy. Turning to page 31. Last year, we released an RFI, which aims to bring down the cost of our electricity supply. This is a key execution priority for us this year, given the size of our electricity cost base. And we see a significant opportunity to take cost out, with the step down in transmission costs a key part of that. Finally, before I hand over to the new CEO, I'm very pleased today to be announcing to shareholders the first set of dividends by Channel Infrastructure, which are at the top end of our dividend guidance range of 70% of normalised free cash flow, comprising a fully imputed final dividend of 5 cents and a fully imputed special dividend of 2 cents per share. This is in effect a 9-month dividend, and the way we've tried to split it reflects the target of a 40-60 split between the interim and final. So that'll give you a feel for how we see the forward dividend profile, together with our indicative dividend range for next year of 9 to 11 cents based on the earnings guidance range we've shared, and our dividend payout policy of 60 to 70% of normalised free cash flow. With the contracts we have and the extent of fixed revenue and the indexation of revenue and hedging of debt protecting us against inflation, there should be a strong degree of confidence in how this business is consistently delivering dividends. I'll now hand over to our incoming CEO, Rob Buchanan, to say a few words of introduction.
Thanks, Naomi, and hi, everyone. It's great to have so many shareholders on the line with us today. I've been with the business since the end of January, and I'm really looking forward to stepping into the CEO role on the 6th of March. I've been incredibly impressed with the clear vision and the capable team at Channel Infrastructure, who continue to work hard to deliver on its plans for the future. As you can see from the 2022 results, the business is in great shape, and it's a real tribute to Naomi and the wider team at Channel Infrastructure who have worked hard to transform the company during an extremely challenging period of time. If you could join me on slide 34. As incoming Chief Executive, it will be my priority to continue delivering on the strategy set up for the company, which is of course to grow shareholder value through continuing optimisation of our business while delivering on our aspiration to be a world-class import terminal. Our priorities this year will be to ensure we deliver safe, reliable and cost-efficient terminal operations and maintenance and the on-budget and on-time completion of remaining conversion project works. We're continuing to work hard with the government and our customers to ensure supply chain resilience, which is good for New Zealand, and we will be delivering on the near-term growth opportunities that we've talked about here today. And ultimately, we'll be working to deliver increasing returns to shareholders through dividends in an inflationary environment. I believe the opportunities for Channel Infrastructure to leverage its unique and highly strategic asset base as New Zealand navigates the energy transition are significant, and I'm really excited to be bringing our plans to fruition over the coming years. I look forward to meeting many of you at our AGM, and now I'll hand back to Naomi to wrap up.
Thanks, Rob. So to wrap up for 2022 on page 35, after significant planning and preparation, we've safely shut down the refinery and commenced terminal operations and relaunched as Channel Infrastructure. The transition went smoothly and we have had a successful 9 months of terminal operations in 2022. Importantly, our conversion project is now significantly de-risked and we have kept it to plan and to budget. Our cost of funding has been reset. In our first 9 months of terminal operations, we delivered our first profit in 3 years, and our strong cash flow has enabled our board to declare a return to dividends for our shareholders. That concludes our formal presentation for today, and I'll now hand back to the operator for questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Andrew Harvey-Green with Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, morning everyone. Just a couple of questions from me. First of all, looking at that contingency and I guess that $30 million of spend move from 2022 to 2023, that seems reasonably encouraging in terms of you've still got quite a bit of contingency there by the sounds of it. How far do you think you need to get through this process before you're able to give us some firm idea of whether that contingency is no longer needed or not?
Hi, Andrew. I think that's going to be a question for the new CEO, so you can ask him that in due course. What we have done to date is left our contingency in, particularly while we're still in an environment where we're, to be honest, seeing weather impacts, which we haven't really experienced before, and also we're in an inflationary environment. But as we get further through 2023 and the work program, and particularly the terminal project upgrades that are underway right now, I think that question you're asking is absolutely going to be the right question, and you can ask that one of Rob at the half year, I think.
Very good. Next question I just had was just looking at the OPEX base for the second half, and it came in a little bit higher than I guess what I was expecting. I just wanted to double check, was there anything I guess in there where you'd describe as I guess carrying slightly higher extra costs in the second half, you know, following or as you went through that conversion process, which will be coming out going forward? I realise you've got the guidance out there for FY23, but just wanted to double check whether there was anything in there that was more than just business as usual?
Not really, Andrew. The first times of import terminal operations is the time when we, get into the new business really, and then the OPEX there that you're seeing for the 9 months and second half is in line with what we expected. I'll probably look at FY 2023 guidance for OPEX to get a feel of, you know, what we think it will look like going forward for terminal.
Okay. Thanks, Yarrick. Next question, just in terms of Hale and Toomey's forecasts, and I guess the big change really is that long-term outlook. I mean, obviously that we've got more jet in the near term, but that long-term outlook certainly seems a lot more positive than it was previously. I'd just be interested to know, in terms of sense checking that those particular forecasts with other channels, whether you'd done anything along those lines, or what Hale and Toomey had done to sort of get comfortable about that relatively significant increase at the back end there.
Yeah, that's been something, Andrew, we've been quite conscious of in getting this updated outlook done. And so part of our process was to ask Hale and Toomey to do just that. So they have engaged across the aviation sector with customers where customers were open to a discussion on that. Because of the changing mix in fuels through the supply chain, we think it's actually quite important that there is a common basis for infrastructure planning. And that's really led to us working quite closely with Auckland International Airport in particular, recognising the importance of jet demand to our business long term, to be working on a common planning basis and set of assumptions. So that has absolutely been part of the process leading up to announcement of the updated outlook today.
Great, thanks. And last question for me is just, I guess, in terms of the potential asset sales. I think I saw you had to buy some platinum at the back end of the year, which I assume, is that going to be sold this year? And also, I guess, the refinery, I think we've still got sitting on the books, but under $30 million of value associated with that. Any sort of update in terms of the sale of that?
So firstly, on platinum, Andrew, we're expecting that sale to occur in the next probably 12 to 24 months. But that value will be effectively monetized in that period of time. On your second part of the value of the units that sits in the balance sheet, just a reminder that it's a combination of scrap and sale value that we hold in there, and it's not really probably a best indication of what that could be really sold for. We have some interest in refining units and are in discussions with a few parties on potential sale, but at this stage probably it's too early to provide more details. As we firm up those discussions, we'll provide you an update.
Okay. And to find, I just would like to wish you, Naomi, all the best going forward, and had a fairly interesting 2 years or so here. So all the best to you, move back to Australia, and welcome, Rob.
Thanks, Andrew.
Your next question comes from Cameron Parker with Craigs Investment Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, and congratulations on a great FY22. Just a couple from me in terms of the capacity and versus the the throughput that's been presented from Hal and Tumi. You've got on a slow substitution basis of up to 4 billion litres heading through the pipeline. Can you just remind me of what the capacity is for you to manage that sort of throughput?
Hi Cam, yes. So what we've looked at from a capacity perspective is really those peak periods. You're looking at the annualised volumes when you're looking at that 4 billion, or so of throughput in a slow transition case, being a high throughput case. And so what we would see in that case and test against is really those summer months for jet throughput. And the way that the pipeline operates today is that we supply a product that goes all the way down into the Waikato. We get paid slightly less for that. And so to the extent that more capacity is needed to meet Auckland demand, in effect, there is lower margin throughput, which can be offset and come by road from Tauranga, which there is capacity to do. So we don't see any issue with capacity from Marsden Point to the Wiri terminal in Auckland in any of the Hale and Tumi fuel demand outlook scenarios.
Okay, great. Thanks, Naomi. Also, just with regards to the pipeline, could you just remind me of the CapEx requirements going forward in terms of useful life, and if there's an extension and so forth, or upgrades required going forward? Is there a step up in CapEx that might be required as the life of the asset kind of expires, or are you able to give a bit of colour around that?
Sure. So, Cam, you might remember the guidance we've given on CapEx over the life of the contracts is 5 to 12 million per annum. And that range takes into account both Marsden Point terminal and pipeline CapEx requirements. With the pipeline, there is some lumpiness in terms of from about every 10 years, you need to do a little bit more work on it, but it's within that range. So it's not any kind of sort of major relighting events that we would expect to see over the term of the Hale and Tumi forecast to continue those assets in use as they are today.
Great. Okay. Thanks. And just the last one with me, just with regards to your imputations going forward, could you just confirm what you think will be imputed on those dividends?
So these dividends that we declared today are fully imputed. we carry, before paying these dividends, we carry imputation credits being an equivalent of 14 cents in dividends. So paying 7 cents now in total effectively will utilize half of that imputation credits balance, with the other half effectively remaining for next years. Beyond that, obviously, we carry a significant value of tax losses in the balance sheet, $500 million, which will mean that we'll pay no tax, income tax, for a number of years. And that means that we will not be sort of increasing the imputation credit balance over time.
Great. Okay. That's all from me. Thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. We will now pause momentarily to allow questions to be registered. Your next question comes from David Oxley with ACC. Please go ahead. David Oxley, your line is now live. Please proceed with your question.
Sorry. Thank you. Hey, could you explain why the first half pack showed the discontinued operations EBITDA at 26.5 mil and that's become 24 million today? Thanks.
Let me just go to that slide.
So David, I think the difference between the two is that through the discontinued ops line, you've got the conversion costs that for accounting purposes you weren't able to provision for at the end of FY21. There's certain costs, things like some of the costs related to workforce transition that we aren't able to provide for. So you've still got those running through that discontinued ops line, and so obviously there's not revenue in the second half. The refinery is shut down, but there's still some conversion costs running through. The thing to note with all of the conversion costs, though, is that they are all going within that total conversion cost budget of $200 to $220 million, which is a cash cost budget consisting of both CapEx as well as OPEX, and the OPEX proportion of that budget has mostly been provisioned for on the balance sheet where that is permitted by the accounting rules, but there's a small amount where we're not able to do that, and that's what you see just running through that that discontinued P&L line.
That makes sense. Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from David Burrell with Croxon Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Great job, as always. Just had a few questions around the biofuels mandate, the DSO and the government diesel reserve. So the biofuels, does that imply that the by volume there will need to be about 3.5% of diesel by volume coming from biofuels and about 5% of petrol volume coming from ethanol? And if that's right, how does that work in practice and how does it affect the storage requirements?
Hi, David. So there has been an update on biofuels in New Zealand, which may not have got to Australia, but let me just start by updating you on that. That proposed mandate was one of the policy measures that the New Zealand government has decided not to proceed with ahead of this year's election. Of course, by the time that announcement was made, the Hale and Toomey forecast had already been done. So what the forecasts assume is that there is a mandate brought in at some point in time, and that gives us a feel for, assuming that does happen at some future date, what's the impact on throughput for our facilities? What you see if you look at the petrol demand chart is that there is a wedge of ethanol fuels coming into the petrol mix to meet a biofuels mandate, and a wedge of biodiesel coming into the diesel fuel demand to meet it on the diesel side. The ethanol fuel can't go through our pipeline because it would contaminate the jet, So that's assumed not to be included when we show those Marsden Point throughput volumes. They don't include any of that volume. If a mandate is not brought in, as is, I guess, the current state of play in terms of active policy, what you would see through our facilities, we would expect, is about a 5% increase in petrol volumes in the absence of a mandate, reflecting those first generation ethanol volumes. On the diesel side, it's a bit different because we would expect diesel biofuels to be renewable second generation biofuels, which can be used as drop-in fuels. So they can utilise all of the existing infrastructure. There's no new requirements for those, and in effect, they just displace or substitute existing volumes, and so you don't really get a change in overall volumes from that substitution over time from fossil diesel to biodiesel. I'll just check. There's a little bit in that, but I'll just check if it makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'm really sort of thinking more about, I'm assuming New Zealand being New Zealand, that the mandate will eventually come in at some point. And what the storage volume requirements are then, particularly as you say, with regard to ethanol, you can't put it through the pipe. So would you imagine you'd be storing some of that, and same with the biodiesel before it gets blended, or do you think you'd get a blended the form of diesel arriving at the terminal and therefore you wouldn't need to blend it?
Yeah, look, they're good questions, and the short answer is that will be up to our customers, the fuel companies, as to how they would choose to meet those mandates. First generation fuels like ethanol will clearly need separate infrastructure, separate tanks, and you could do that at Marsden Point and truck it. That's absolutely an option. In terms of whether it's brought in pre-blended or blended in New Zealand, they're all part of those supply chain considerations, which are really ones for our customers. So certainly, as and when any mandate comes back on the table, they're the sort of discussions we would be having to understand how we can support what's required from an infrastructure perspective.
Gotcha. And hoping I haven't missed anything on the DSO, but what additional storage volume do you think is going to be required over and above what's planned?
Look, we don't quite know that yet, and that really reflects that the government is still working through the detailed design of that policy. One of the things they're looking at is how they will measure days cover, and whether that's sort of an average over a period of time or an absolute minimum to ensure an absolute minimum buffer in the system. That's one of the things that's being worked through. Once that detailed design work is done, I think it will be clearer for everyone to assess whether the capacity we've got today can accommodate that, or whether any additional capacity might be needed. I think the third part of your question, David, was on the diesel reserve. Clearly that needs new capacity, because that is capacity over and above what we have in service today for the fuel companies. And we've got plenty of capacity to do that at Marsden Point. We could do all of the 70 million litres. We could do a part of that. That's really part of the government's process to tender that reserve, which is currently underway.
Yes, thanks. The only other thing that I guess you would have better insight into than us perhaps is I would imagine the government would want to split between North and South Island, and maybe between Northland and the rest of the North Island. Do you have any view as to their thinking on that at this point, or at least the state of play, thought, etc. around that?
Yeah, the question of regional diversification is certainly something that will get considered. A practical aspect of this, though, is that diesel's not like wine. You have to turn it over. You have to do that about every 6 months. And so this is intended to be a permanent reserve And so it needs to sit close to a market that can actually turn it over. And most of the diesel demand outside of the north is in relatively low throughput locations, making it very difficult to do that. So too early to say, but I would expect there quite possibly will be some smaller reserves elsewhere in the country, but that the vast majority of the diesel reserve is very likely to sit in the place where you've got the most throughput to allow that to be turned over.
Such a mystery as to where that would be.
We have a few tanks there. We have 400 million litres of unutilised tank capacity, so we're ready, willing and able to support the government with that.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks, Naomi. I'll look forward to following your career from now on, and welcome, Rob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Your next question comes from Neville Lewis with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning, team. Can you hear me all right?
We can. Hi, Neville.
Excellent. Good morning. Right. I have four pencil sharpening questions, really, and to kick it right off. If I run the ruler over the chart you've got for the CapEx profile, I come to a number that's sort of above the 200 to 220 range. I just want to check that that's due to uncertainty around the timing of when the CapEx falls into years, and the 200 to 220 is still a nominal value for that period.
We hold Neville 220 as the total conversion project budget there, so it'll be just probably that shading that is a bit misleading when you look at the chart.
Yeah. Great, good.
The columns are not intended to add up to more, we assure you.
Good, thank you. Never let an analyst loose of the ruler. Okay, next question then, just on the tax losses. I see in this latest report, you've got the $507 million booked tax losses. At the half, you had $467. I presume some of that is related to the way in which the terminal costs get treated by the tax department, which means obviously you've got further conversion outlay to come. Does that mean the 507 could creep up further over the course of this and next year?
So just to be clear, the 460 that we reported at half year was effectively predominantly due to the write-off of refining assets for tax purposes at that point in time.
Yeah.
What happened in the second half of the year obviously was a significant portion of the conversion costs were paid through the transition of the business, and that's really when those costs become tax deductible. It's really the realization of the conversion costs that happened in the second half. There's still a fair amount of costs to be incurred that we carry in the balance sheet under provisions. But equally, next year, 2023, will be a year of full terminal operations with the full benefit of the cash flow and profit. So that will offset those conversion costs that are yet to spend. So to answer your question, I would not expect a significant increase of that number, and probably that's where we land, $500 million.
Perhaps another way to ask the question is sort of what kind of tax shield will the remaining terminal CapEx have? Obviously, it's split between OpEx and CapEx, and I'm not sure how the tax authorities treat that, but you'll have some idea. How much tax shield should we think about for the next 2 years?
Are you asking, Neville, about sort of tax depreciation going forward?
I'm not sure exactly how the mechanisms work, but clearly, you know, there's some tax loss gain or tax loss benefit for you guys offsetting the outlays, and if you've got further outlays to come, it's whether or not there are further tax shield benefits coming from that.
Neville, probably the one I'd refer you to on that is if you have a look at the pie charts on the different components of the conversion project, you'll see the costs still to come are predominantly terminal upgrades, which are CapEx in nature, so you just get, you know, based on the normal depreciation rates for tax purposes, you get the benefit of that. And then the other part still to come is predominantly remaining decommissioning costs, which have been provided for already in the balance sheet. So you're not getting additional protection, as Yarek's talked about, the losses have
been recognised there.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's clear. Thank you. Then just moving on to slide 26, and there's a useful commentary there. We mentioned that sort of at circa 3.4 billion litres in 2025, you're looking at about break-even versus take or pay. If I understand the contract timing correctly, you know, 2025 is the year in which you sort of got the first quarter is at the old take or pay, the current take or pay levels and fixed payments, and then you transition to the sort of 90 million take or pay. In that statement, the 3.4 billion litres is sort of the break-even. What is assumed there? Is it the starting number, the ending number, or the sort of the one-quarter, three-quarter blended of the total?
So the 3.4 billion Neville is really the point at which you hit break-even on your $100 million level of take-or-pay. Obviously,
right.
That's getting indexed every year, which we expect to occur in 2025 while we're still at that level.
That's good, thank you. And so that's the $100 million plus the fixed fee that's still applying at the start of that. Am I correctly assuming then that 1 April 2025 is when you transition down to the 90 million take or pay, or have I got that incorrectly?
So that's from 1 April 2025, correct?
Good. Okay.
But, so great. Just to clarify, Neville, so that the break-even was calculated against the fee levels, both fixed fee and take-or-pay levels across that calendar year.
So right, so it's a blended average. So it's right. $100 million for a quarter, then $90 million and the similar, you know, the respective...
For a three-quarter, yeah. Right.
Good, okay, that's super clear, thank you. Great, just one last one from me, which is around the electricity cost reductions, and again, just clarifying, pencil sharpening, around what you say there. I think in the past you said, and I think this PAC says also, most of the reason for the 41 to 44 million guidance range for OPEX for 23 is related to uncertainty around what happens around the grid costs. Is it right for me to assume that all of that uncertainty, that 3 million gap, is due to, you know, you're at the bottom end at the best outcome for grid and the top end for no change in grid?
No, that sort of assessment hasn't changed really, Neville. So we note on that
right.
slide you would have seen that we have an in principle confirmation of the rating for Marsden plants, but that's sort of yet to be confirmed ahead of 1 April. And other costs, connection and distribution are still sort of work in progress.
And I think, Neville, just to I think what was your question, which was, is the electricity all the range? No, it's not. It's clearly a key part of that range,
yes.
Like every business, we're managing, you know, all the range of factors, cyclones, inflation, all those sorts of things. And so what we've done is obviously heading into this result, had another look at that, made sure we remain comfortable with the range, which we do based on our latest outlook for the business.
Great, thank you. And I'm assuming whatever gains you may realise at 1 April, you know, we can scale those up for a full year for the following periods. Just on the 2 million plus gain expectation, I've read that as specifically relating to the energy charges, so excluding grid. You mentioned on sort of during that slide as well. Have I interpreted that correctly? Because
that's,
you know, 2 million would look like quite a small number.
Mm-hmm. That's supply.
Great. Okay, thank you. And is it crazy to think that could be a much larger number? Clearly, you've got the plus in there. But 3 to 4.
But just wait and see, Neville. Just wait and see. That's what we're looking for.
Good, yes. Waiting with bated breath. Very good. Okay, that's all from me. Thank you very much.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Ms. James for any closing remarks.
Thanks everyone for joining us today, and I look forward to catching up with many of you over the next month before I finish up at the end of March.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.